In today's episode, we are joined by Henry Latham. Henry is the founder of Prod MBA, a company that he bootstrapped in 2020 after almost a decade in the tech industry. Through Prod MBA, he has trained over 400 product managers, and he's now launched Break Free, a coaching program for senior product managers to build micro businesses and escape the corporate grind. In this episode, Henry will share his learnings from his first VC-backed startup that he applied to Prod MBA, why founders should focus on generating revenue early on, and how to quickly test an idea. Today's episode is part of a short series dedicated to discussing failure, because fear of failure can hold us back, yet it's a prerequisite for success. Failure is a natural part of life that each and every one of us will experience to varying degrees. How we process and learn from it will prepare us for future challenges. Welcome, Henry.
Thanks for having me.
Let's dive straight in. I've got lots of questions to ask you. I wanted to first start with Prod MBA. It would be great to understand how your experiences led you to launching and starting Prod MBA.
I suppose about 10 years of build up towards it. So just for a bit of context, I started my first business back in 2014. So it's a company called Backtracker, where I essentially had done a year abroad in Spain working, went traveling in Brazil to try and self-teach Portuguese. And then on that 3 months by myself, a lot of thinking time, came up with an idea of tracking your journey as you're backpacking, sharing with other people, like pinning cool suggestions. So Google Maps meets Facebook at the time. Went back to the UK after that trip, raised a bit of money, put a team together, and I tried to build that business on the side of finishing my final year at university. And on that journey, very much a startup, right? Going digital, trying to go big, and just made every mistake you could possibly think of, from, you know, decisions but driven by ego to just zero product experience and strategy and discovery. And also buying into this trap that doing a venture-backed startup was the only way to build a business. So, you know, having conversations with our advisors and investors saying that you should be aiming to raise in a million plus. And all of that just made me lose sight of what was really important, which is building a great product. So 2 years later, that business failed. I learned a huge amount along the journey, but it ultimately failed. And really from 2020, I was trying to really understand what makes products succeed, what makes products fail. So doing a lot of different roles, from like freelancing, consulting, to some full-time roles as well in Germany and Brazil, Portugal, and back from the UK. So fast forward to 2020, when I started Prod MBA, I had a really important moment of realization where every year I do a review of the previous year. Browse the calendar, I'll look at all my journal entries and see what are the things that brought me energy, what are the things that de-energized me, and thinking about goals for the year ahead. And I remember writing in my journal, I think it was like the 3rd of January, really distinctly, quote, "Nobody's coming for you. Nobody's going to build this business for you. You have to go and do it." So I had all these excuses before then of, oh, I need a co-founder, I need investment, I need to wait for the right idea, I need 5 more years experience to do another business, build a successful business, all of which were excuses. And when I finally wrote that down, saw my own bullshit, that was the first time I really saw a huge amount of progress in terms of not just becoming an entrepreneur, because I've done that before and I've done that in a few different guises, but really building the kind of business I wanted to build, which was what I call a micro business. So solo founded, no investment, profitable from very early on. And also allowing me to have freedom of time. So not being stuck in meetings all day, scaling the team, stress of trying to pitch to investors all the time, like I'd had with my first business. And yeah, fast forward January to April, various experiments that failed, came up with the concept of Prod MBA in April, tested that out, got to revenue within a month, and then got to profitability within 4 months of that business, eventually scaling it to about 250K, I think 95% of which was profit, and got it eventually down to, in fact, 4 to 5 hours per day in terms of work, which are really nice at a lifestyle business.
That's really incredible. I've got lots of questions to ask you. When you were talking, I was thinking, oh, I'd like to know a little bit more about certain aspects of your journey. The first one is around creating that transition from working to moving in to running your business full time. How did you manage that transition?
Yeah, it was quite unique in my case because March, April 2020 was, guess what, COVID. So I've been doing sort of consultancy stuff, had a few contracts still ongoing, but I got the feeling that work was, the whole world of work had sort of paused in a way. So previously, I've been testing ideas on the side, working full time, which, by the way, I think anybody should do, but did luckily had a period where I said, I can really focus on this full time. And because it's a boot camp, there was, you know, I was aware that it's going to be more good amount of work, right? Well, look, I could either see this as a negative and go, oh my God, like income's frozen, what am I going to do? And I said, actually, it's a really good opportunity to test out this idea I've had for a while. Yeah, I put an offer together, reached out to a load of people I thought might be a good fit, got them in a sales call, sold them on the rally proposition, and then went, okay, shit, now I need to go and build the solution out and deliver it in a month's time to these 20 people or so that were joining the first bootcamp. Yeah, luckily, as I said, I had that window of opportunity, but that, you know, that's not true in other cases, like other business I've worked on whilst working full time. And I think it's a real myth, in fact. Again, it's one of these excuses that's really fear disguised in some sort of logic that, you know, you can't start a business until you quit your job and you give yourself a year to focus on something. It helps because you can be more focused, but also things always take longer than you think. So it can also be a really big risk.
I started She Founds when I was working, and I did notice that there was a lot that I had to learn along the way. There was a whole marketing and sales aspect that I'd never done before. And just getting into the rhythm as well of working on it consistently.
There's two things there. I think there's system. So systems and momentum. So I think the first thing, systems. Like I always talk about this. We've talked about this before with in front of me. Creating a daily habit around building your own business is the most important thing you can do. If you give yourself 30 minutes in the morning before your busy work day starts, if you've got kids before the kids are up, whatever it is, just 30 to 60 minutes a day to continuously move towards the goal of building a business is extremely powerful, because you're putting a system in place that just is slowly chipping away at that goal. Now, that 30 minutes could be used for reading a book on positioning or marketing. If you're completely new to that area, it could be going and doing cold outreach, right? It's whatever you need, your business needs at that point in time. It could be speaking to target customers, for example. Whatever your business needs at the time, just constantly moving towards it every single day, I think, is the most powerful thing. And the second thing related to that is then momentum. That's going to give you momentum, right? It's going to create this sense that you're moving towards your goal consistently and effectively. And the second part of that, and one of the reasons that when I have conversations with aspiring entrepreneurs, I say, look, just focus on getting to revenue. Sell it. That means just literally putting an offer out, getting a sale, and then working the rest out after it, because that's going to give you such a sharp focus and drive and momentum to go, oh, wow, if someone's willing to pay their hard-earned money for this thing that I'm offering, then suddenly the wonders of sort of pressure and expectation make your brain just 10x more effective at actually then focusing and delivering a solution to them.
Going back to your first startup that you had, what were some of the key takeaways that you'd learned on that part of the journey that you now, and I suppose as a freelancer as well, because I feel like that freelancer role is quite entrepreneurial as well, because you have to try and put yourself
absolutely
out there.
Absolutely, yeah, a lot of sales, client management.
What did you learn in those two chapters of your life that you applied to Prod MBA?
Mm-hmm. Huge amount of things, but the ones that really stand out, first thing would be genuine customer centricity. So being genuine, you know, that's a clever sounding word, but essentially like actually listening to the customer and what they need, rather than going, oh, I've been backpacking, I know what backpackers want. You ended up building some super over complex solution that no one really wanted. But even a common mistake I see is going, okay, I think the customer wants A, but actually what they really want is probably B. So misidentifying customer needs, or just listening directly. You might say to me, Henry, I really want simple recipes to make my evening meal after a busy day of work. I might go, okay, great, we're going to build you that boot. Here you go, boot. You might go, I don't want to pay for it though. Or actually, I'm not that sure about that. Actually, what I really wanted was like easy, fast delivery, for example. So as we don't want to just listen to ourselves and put ourselves at the center of the story, right, the product story, we equally want to be really sure that we're getting the understanding really what the customer wants. So I think that real customer centricity. I think the second thing, and one thing I love about being a founder, is there's nowhere to hide. If you make a mistake, you're going to see it pretty quickly. Or if you try some product idea out, you're going to see very quickly what did or did not work. I've always been basically since age 20, 21, like in entrepreneurship. So I've got really used to that. But the beginning, no, it was 100% ego saying, no, like the customers just don't understand it, or we just need to change this one thing a little bit. And then it's going to be awesome and it's going to have millions of downloads. And that wasn't the case. And I think slowly you realize you have to just park your ego on the side and just say, look, it's not a personal thing. It's just, I need to understand what the market wants. And then I need to work really hard to make sure that we can actually deliver whatever that thing is. Third thing, depends on the type of business you want. For most people, why do they want to start a business? It is to really have some sort of freedom of time and some level of financial freedom. But it's not to be like a billionaire, right? It's just to be able to pay the bills, travel a bit, yeah, do whatever gives you joy in life. And to achieve that, we need to focus on profitability very early on. So you do not want to kick this down the road. Even if you have investment and investors say, like, I'm not worried, I want you to grow the business. Profitability really early on, because firstly, you only get real validation if someone's willing to pay you money for it. And second thing, you only know whether this is going to be a feasible business if it is profitable, right? i.e. that there is more revenue than the costs. So don't kick that down the road, because I see founders that they've had a business for maybe 5-6 years. They get to a point where they run out of investment, or they just realize that we're never going to make money from this thing. And what have they done? Yeah, they've learned a lot along the way, but they've basically wasted 6 years as well. And they could have known that really, really early on. So any business idea I've tried now, and I've tried, you know, 8 iterations of things that I can think of in the last like 5 years. One thing I was good at is going pretty quickly, can we make money from this or not? If not, try something else. Don't get too attached to it, essentially.
Dive a little bit deeper into that. I think it's very easy to get attached to your ideas, especially if you're passionate about something. How many times would you attempt to try something before you say, oh, this isn't going to make me money, I'm going to maybe focus on something else, or maybe like iterate on this idea? At what point would you decide to give up?
Yeah, so that's the $1 million question. Essentially, you want to look for signal from the market that there's something here. So what does that mean? It means firstly, can we find the market? Right. You know, you might go, my target market is first-time mums. Great. If you can't consistently find first-time mums to speak to and sell to, it's going to be pretty hard to build a business around. Second thing, acute problems. So it is what they're suffering from, a vitamin or a painkiller. Painkillers, that's keeping them up at night. They need this thing to live a good life, or is it just nice to have, for example? Because it's a lot easier to sell something to someone when it's an acute problem. Why? Because think about your own lives, right? If, say, for example, you hate your job and you want to start your own business, absolutely hate it, you dread Mondays, you're going to be really motivated to at least check out an offer that says, we're going to help you quit your job and start your own business. And you're going to be much more likely to test it out. You're going to be much more likely to be patient with it. You're going to be much more likely to spend money on it to see, is this actually going to work or not? So can you find the market? Can you find an acute problem? And then thirdly, your offer statement. So we teach a framework called MVO, right? Minimal viable offer. Rather than worrying about feasibility, can we build this thing, getting really excited about building the solution, which most people like to do because it's more fun, you have to do that upfront work of basically saying, okay, if we summarize what we're offering, we put it in a sentence and we go pitch it to somebody, like, are they interested? And can ideally we do that on some sort of sales call so that we can get live feedback from them? Now, ideally we get a yes. I've launched a new business literally last month called Break Free. zero landing page. I literally had, no, that's a lie. I had 10 words on a landing page through something called ConvertKit, collected emails for a beta program, sent out one launch email, got people on lead calls, just did a live call and then said, look, here's what I'm offering, got a deposit from them. So ideally we then get a sale and we go, yeah, there's potential here. But if not, we're going to get really valuable feedback. So say, Bhavish, I'm going to sell you on, hey, Bhavish, I'm offering like wellness retreats outside of London for busy city workers who want to re-energize, let's say. You might go, yeah, great, sounds awesome, here's the money. Or more likely, you're probably going to go, okay, well, where is it? Or I'm not that convinced because I do yoga every week and that's my relaxation process. Or I've done that thing before, but I prefer to do it in Portugal because it's nicer weather. So what do? You can then gather and go, okay, well, there's something here. There's definitely a need. I think I just need to iterate on the offer. And then you can come back with a new offer. So you could go, Bhavish, I've organized a really nice two-day retreat. It's in Southern Portugal. It's going to be end of April. We're going to organize everything for you so you don't have to put any effort in. Here are some nice pictures of it. Are you willing to put down a deposit for it? If so, great, green light. You can go build the solution. If not, you probably need to iterate again. And it's really just following that process. At some point, you might go, I just can't crack this code. And maybe I need to change market. Maybe I need to look at another problem. But the only way you can really know whether you should pivot or not is if you're actually going to the market and saying, here's what I'm offering. Are you going to pay for it? Here's what I'm offering. Are you willing to pay for it? And just getting into that process of not being wedded to an idea at all. Just saying, look, I think there's something here. Let's just test it out. Don't overthink it. Test it out. See what they say. And then iterate from there, really.
Thank you for that. You mentioned that you've tested your new idea, Break Free. This idea is helping senior product managers launch their micro business. Why are you particularly focusing on micro businesses? I think most people, especially in terms of tech companies, they'll be looking to launch a much bigger company that potentially requires VC funding.
Yeah, this is a really important question. So firstly, I think the big myth, particularly for those who work in tech, right, product managers, product people, is that a startup equals the only avenue to building a successful business, because that's what we see, right? We see it in the news. We see it on TechCrunch. Those are the kind of conversations we have, right? Talking about the Mark Zuckerbergs, the Jeff Bezoses of the world. We're not talking about the guy down the road who runs a dog walking company who probably cashes in 500K a year. We never heard of him because he's busy walking dogs and just enjoying his free time probably. So there's this idea that startups equal the only way to build a business. And the second thing is, I think it's ego, quite honestly, and I've noticed that in myself previously, in my first business, is that startup has huge promise. It's the promise to potentially change the world, the promise to sell for millions, if not billions at some point, the fame and glory of being featured on Forbes under 30 or under 40 or whatever it is. And that generally encourages us down a path where we feel we can get those things, the fame and the glory, the wealth and the status. It takes a humility to just go, you know what, do I really want that? Do I really want that? And for some people, they do, and that's fine, right? It may be that you're really driven by impact, right? You want to cure cancer. Awesome. We need people like that in the world. It may be that you're just like super competitive and being mega wealthy is just your way to see how am I scoring in the rankings. And that's fine. Again, we need people like that that are going to build these companies. The status thing, I think, is a losing game. But I think my general point is just ask yourself, like, do I really want that? Or do I want the status, the wealth that comes with that? And if it is those things, do you really want those, in fact? Because when you take a step back, the kind of conversations I had during ProdMBA that led me to launch Break Free, in fact, and the conversation I had with myself really were, what do I really want personally? For me, it's freedom of time, right? Financial freedom to some extent, but as long as I can pay the bills, do two big trips a year, get a nice surfboard every couple of years, right? I don't really care about other stuff. So for me, it's always about freedom of time. And then I go, well, how do I achieve that? It's not going to be through a startup, because my first startup, what was I doing? Rather than traveling and working remote and learning cool new stuff, I was trekking around London pitching to investors in November, stress of meetings and managing people, huge amounts of uncertainty with a digital startup. I've got no regrets about that. I love that experience. But now with 10 years experience, I go, well, how can I craft a deliberate business that stays small, that doesn't require lots of meetings, that can actually go to profitability early on? It's a higher chance, in fact, of giving yourself financial freedom there. And that was the direction I wanted to take, was with a micro business. And again, that is absolutely not to say that you shouldn't do a startup to somebody. Startups are super exciting. And the challenges of building a tech product, it's so hard. And intellectually, it's so engaging as well. And part of me definitely misses that, right, by doing a sort of more physical business, the more sort of coaching bootcamp style businesses. But also, I just remember it does come with a cost. And I think everyone needs to just be aware of that when they go down that path.
I've been seeing your feed on LinkedIn, and I'm very envious of your Portugal experience.
Yeah. Again, I did a post recently for anyone listening. Like, we moved to Portugal in September, to about six months. But I've been moving around actually before that a lot. What people don't see is that they'll see, say, Prod MBA, right? I've been doing that for 4 years, profitable early on. You've been a great business. But they didn't see all the iterations and the hard work, and that they're getting up at 5 a.m. really for the 8 years before that. So I can now go, and I think this is always true, in fact, now it's easy for me to go, right, I'm doing a 5-hour work day. It's awesome. I went surfing this morning. Great. But there was a huge amount of work that got, and there is still a lot of work. Today I'm working till 7:30, right? But it's about doing things on your own terms that is, I think, most important.
You started your first business about 10 years ago. The landscape has since changed. How have things changed now in the landscape? And what would people be doing differently now compared to what they did before?
Really, really important question. So 10 years ago, 2014. So Lean Startup came out, I think, 2009, 2010. And that pushed the narrative that we need to... It had been around, but this is the first time it sort of came into the mainstream of tech and business, that we should test ideas before building them. Or keep things lean, right? As small as possible, test them out, and then go from there. The landscape's very different now. So firstly, in terms of context of the Lean Startup, firstly, go read it, because a lot of people talk about Lean Startup, haven't actually read the book. Read the book. Secondly, just remember that the context of it was quite different in terms of the team structure. So you were looking at a team, Eric Ries, like a highly technical team of like absolute A player, all extremely technical, who could therefore all operate in this extremely agile, just test stuff out really, really quickly, build digital solutions really, really quickly. That's usually not the case. Usually we're looking at maybe one technical co-founder with business person, maybe a product person. So that's important context. The second thing that's more important is there are now, based on last year, 2023, there are 16 times more products than there were just 10 years ago, with the advent of AI facilitating launching stuff really easily. That's just going to absolutely explode. So we might look at 50 times more, 100 times more products than just 10 years ago over the next few years. What does that mean? It means that markets are more competitive. So it means that in the project management space, rather than being like two players like there were 10 years ago, there's literally 50, for example. And they're all occupying. Some are fighting for the big dominant position. Others are fighting for niches, project management for hairdressers, for example. Right, so we're all looking at these different little niches or trying to slice the pie in different ways. What does that mean? The implications for us, therefore, is that we should not start thinking about an MVP, like minimal viable product, i.e. how can we get a really quick solution that somebody might want out into the market? Instead, we need to understand where there's a gap in the market first. And that's where something called the minimal viable offer comes in. That is essentially going, okay, what could we pitch to somebody that they might be interested in to give us confidence that, yeah, if we do go and build this MVP, this solution, someone's actually going to use it because the market's so busy, right? So we need to really understand the position in the market we're going to occupy before we go and build the thing. And it'd be really simple. MVO is made up of three things, target market, desired outcome, like what do they want? And then how we deliver in a unique way. So for example, with Prod MBA, example of an MVO would be we help product managers fast track their path to head of product by getting them to build a real product from zero to revenue. Target market product managers, what do they want? Promotion, like getting to product leader. How do we do it in a unique way? Basically, get you to build real product rather than just give you loads of theory for example. Superhuman email application, they help busy tech CEOs save 2 to 3 hours per day with lightning fast email. Right, the unique way they do it, speed, unbelievably fast. And it really is as simple as getting together with your team and say, okay, well, what is it that we're really going to offer? How do we ensure that it's really going to be unique so it stands out in a busy market? And then let's just go pitch it to them. It could be changing your LinkedIn header, putting some posts down, say, hey, anyone interested, book a call. Could be putting that single sentence on Facebook ads or Instagram ads and seeing, are people clicking through? Whatever the call to action is, are they taking action in some way? And it really is as simple as that. Getting a sense of, does somebody want what we're offering before we worry about, even worrying about building their solution there? Because otherwise it's so easy to get, you know, everyone's been there, we get excited about an idea we've got. It's easy to do that and go, oh my God, how are we going to build it and get caught up on all this complexity? It's hard psychologically, not theoretically. Theoretically, it's super easy. Just go, hey, I'm offering this thing. Who wants it? Psychologically, it's hard because there's the chance of being rejected. So we hide away from that and focus on building and questions of feasibility.
There's really easy ways to test your idea now as well. For example, Wix is so easy to put together to test that, do that experimentation that actually doesn't require any technical skills, which is great, which makes it just much faster to test your ideas. What are some of the tools that you've used that are really helpful in experimenting?
So I think the first thing, just be aware of what principles do we want to follow to guide us? Because the tools will always change and they're probably like outdated by the time we publish this, but generally, I like to do things that are going to be minimal effort. So you're not going to allow yourself to get caught up on little complexities. And second one is cost. I think particularly if you're bootstrapping, right, starting something by yourself, even if you're taking on $20 a month hosting a website, there's a bit of a psychological cost that comes with that that is more than the $20. I think it does more damage, right, to your mind than it does to your bank account. So I tried to follow that, right? Really cheap and really quick. So for example, with landing pages, I like Card. So C-A-R-R-D. Let me double check if it's .co. I'm sure we can link it through after. Yeah, C-A-R-R-D.co for landing pages. Really quick, very quick to build. They've got loads of nice, simple existing templates for these kind of simple landing pages. And the second thing is $19 a year. So you're not looking at, usually you're paying that per month. I really like it because it's quick and lean. When it comes to no code building, right, so building a really quick digital solution, I really like Bubble. If you've got something that is more complex, that requires complexity, but it can be a big drain on time. And I really like Softr. So Softr, softr.io, for just using a very quick, you can build a prototype. I did a series on this, in fact, build a live prototype within, I think, 3 or 4 minutes that I got from idea to live, like having something you could download as an app on your phone. So that can be really effective. The final thing is usually Google Docs in some form, Sheets and Docs. Rarely do we need to go and get expensive tools for our first version or running our first experiment. So, you know, break free, charging over $2,000 per person for doing this program, but I didn't have an email. I didn't have a website. I onboarded them just sending calendar invites to previous personal email. And I just used a Google Doc to say, do these 3-4 things before we start our 2-day sprint. And that's it, just to show, like, you don't need all this stuff. It is ultimately window dress. It's our ego trying to protect ourselves from potentially getting rejected. In fact, I think so. I think my point there is, if the offer's good, hack together whatever works, whatever's going to deliver the value that you've promised. Don't stress about making the most beautiful website ever. It's ultimately a waste of time.
Yeah. I think that when people have the idea, they want to make their business look official.
They want it to reflect themselves, right? They want it to, it's a reflection of ourselves, which is ego, again, speaking, and ego with a bit, there's just no time for it as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I've definitely made the mistake of doing that before when I'm experimenting. Okay, people won't believe we're a real company and we've got to set up on company's house and do all that stuff, which is a whole drain on energy as well, because it might not work. 100%. And then you're also going to have to like submit accounts to them. You're not even generating a revenue yet. So trying to avoid doing things like that.
Exactly. Until you've got a first sale, just do not worry about all the window dressing, the legal company, the brand name, website, any of these things. That doesn't matter. The other really important point there, and I've noticed this, luckily I sort of caught myself with it about 6-7 years ago, but when you do things like buy a brand name and a domain and an email and register the company, you've already nailed your flag to a certain product concept. So we talk about MVP idea, right? The need to pivot and change ideas really quickly. Even if you've just spent $5 on an email domain, like breakfreesprints.com, you are way less likely to pivot because you go, oh, I've set this up. Like maybe we try and keep the same brand name for this whole different idea. You're just less likely to pivot. So you want to create fewer what I call psychological hooks, fewer reasons to stick with an idea that cloud, the only thing that matters, which is essentially like, do people want it or not? If not, we need to try something else. So I actually recommend having zero commitment to anything other than stating the offer, sending it to someone and seeing, like, are they interested? Are they willing to pay for it, more importantly?
I do have a question around things that people could do to try and avoid the common pitfalls of failure. There's a very famous graph that goes around, like 90% of all businesses fail in the first 5 years. We touched on this a little bit already. Is there anything else that you want to add to that in terms of things that people could do to try and avoid failure?
So the first thing is the very word failure is unhelpful for us as entrepreneurs. Here is literally a list of my failures before building Prod MBA. Backtracker 2014-16, consulting, I didn't really want to do it, 2016-20, publishing a book with very little traction 2019, an idea for aligning remote HR teams, January 2020. Journaling app, 2020, failure. Idea for aligning remote product teams, failure. Idea for making product teams more effective, failure, March 2020. There's about 7. I'm sure there are way more, by the way, of small ideas that I half tested. So when we just go, for example, my mentality from after Backtracker was just try something out and see what happens, right? It's an experiment. It's not a failure. Now, that doesn't mean I blind my ego and go, well, I didn't really want it to work anyway. So it doesn't count as a failure. It just means you go, oh, that didn't work. Okay, what can I learn from it? Absorb that learning and then go again. So it's just an experiment mindset. Because when we treat this as a failure, it's hard to pick ourselves up, right? We get all excited about an idea. We go, oh my God, this is going to be amazing. It's going to transform my life. I'm going to be an entrepreneur. You try it, it falls flat. Or even worse, you just spend loads of time building it and never even launch something. It falls flat and then you're picking yourself up takes a lot of time. I know, I observe that a lot in people that have tried starting a business. Whereas if you just go, try a thing, if it doesn't work, go again, go again, go again, then that's the most effective thing you can do, right? To persist, to have persistence and just keep trying until something works. And I think the second thing is actually knowing what was a failure and what wasn't. Most aspiring entrepreneurs live in this sort of gray zone where they've got an idea. They may have started working on something. They might have tested out a Figma prototype even, but they never get clear feedback on they never ask, are you willing to pay for it in some form? And because of that, they're always in this gray zone where it's like, should I stick with this? Should I not? Did it work? Will it work? Rather than getting that nice, clean feedback of going, does someone want it? Great. Are they willing to pay for it? Great. If not, try something else. Because that helps you move really, really quickly. So rather than, I've had a student this week who worked on an idea for 1.2 years, working the solution, doing a few prototypes, never validated it. And it was just stagnant and stuck. And he was stuck. And then what did he do? Worked with me and Break Free. Built a product from zero to real revenue within 48 hours. So more progress in 48 hours than 1.2 years by just really zeroing in on the revenue question.
Yeah. It's amazing that they did it in 48 hours just to test it. And that's how quick it can be to test your idea.
Exactly. 100%. We can be extremely quick with this stuff. But the steps are essentially, there are more things than this, but broadly, it's really define a problem that you think is acute. To find the target market, we use something called a 5-minute business model, which is do really quick numbers on what's market size, how much do people generally spend on this category, product training, for example. great, okay, we could build a business here. Fourth, what are we going to offer them? So MVO format. What do we help you achieve? How do we do it in a unique way? And then reach out to 10 people, pitch the offer, see whether they're willing to pay, get a deposit from them. That's it. You've got a business. Then it really is that simple.
Great. That's amazing. A reminder to me. I think it's always important to just remind yourself to keep going and be fast rather than holding ideas in your head. I'm reminding myself every day to like be executing.
Yeah. And I think a good bit of advice would be, it's hard to come up with a compelling offer, right? An offer that somebody really wants. We've got a student, Cerise, at the moment. She's looking at helping first-time mums. And we've got loads of ideas. She tested one out around events to help with social isolation, right? Mum stuck at home with the baby. But we went, okay, well, that wasn't compelling. What else could we do? Well, I said, just go speak to them. Just go like, okay, what are the challenges you face? Understand what's going on. You go to them, okay, well, what would make this a really irresistible solution? And then she's gone and aggregated those notes, and she's now just going to basically pitch back what she thinks would be a really compelling solution for them. So it should be a conversation, in fact. For example, like Break Free, I didn't do technical market research, right? I put an offer together and pitched it. But that was based off at least 4 years' experience speaking to product managers, speaking to senior product people, like really deeply understanding them through hundreds of interactions, if not thousands of interactions, to take all that messy learning and experiences, package it in something that I felt was compelling. If you go, I want to start a business, but I don't know what to offer, all my ideas are bad, or I want the perfect idea, just go and speak to 5 people from a target group and say, look, I'm thinking about starting something in, you know, how you stay fit. What are the challenges you face? And then go from there.
One thing that people in general find difficult is how other people perceive you in terms of being successful or a failure. Do you tell other people about your ideas or not? Like what you're experimenting on, your social circle, for example, do you tell them or do you just keep things to yourself?
It's a really good question, actually, because I think I was laughing there, but like it is a serious thing. Right? We as humans, we're social creatures. We don't like to do things that go against the majority with anything. That's why leaving a job is really scary, because we're told that we have to be in a job and a career path, and that's the right thing to do, despite it leading to less happiness and fulfillment. So there is something there. Do I tell people about it? This is a really interesting one. Yes. If I'm in conversation, I'll bring it up. If it's someone that I think is going to help develop the idea, and also be open to it, right? I remember half my family, when I started a business age 20, conversations like, shouldn't you get a real career? Shouldn't you go and get a job? You're going to have that, by the way. You're going to have some friction, right? People are jealous and want to pull you back into doing a 9-to-5 or whatever it is. So that will exist. I think I probably tell people less about my ideas the older, I'm going to say the more experience I get, because as I consult less with myself on ideas, I've just realized that the only person that is going to give you really good feedback is going to be the target market, the person that suffers from the problem. So my immediate reaction with any idea is just like, go speak to people. So if I had an idea about helping product managers start businesses, immediately I just messaged a few people, got on a few calls. It's not only am I going to get better answers, it's going to be a lot faster than me spending a month in my own head or chatting to my friends who have no idea about product managers. It's going to be a hell of a lot faster just doing 5 calls this week, speak to a few of them, get a sense of the problem, and then go from there. And also that's going to give you confidence so that when you feel that social pressure to, you know, get back in your box, I think we call it tall poppy syndrome, right? Sort of be cut down to size, then you can be confident because, you know, well, I've spoken to people. I know this is a problem. I know there's something there. I know there's some way that I could build a business to help that. So I find that's really the best way to overcome that. And then honestly, people don't really care what you're up to. We like to think that everyone's watching us and go, oh my God, wow. Bhavish, like we're constantly rooting for you every day and following your journey. We want to. We've known each other, I think, over a year now. If I see your name pop up on LinkedIn, I'm like, awesome, how's Bhavish? Like, what are you up to? But we're not there every day checking the progress or changes to your website and things like that. So I think just remembering that you're on your own journey. The best point of reference is going to be your target market. And that's it. Just keep tapping away at the wall. Keep working away and you're going to make progress maybe in the dark and the quiet, right, without shouting it from the rooftops. But at some point, you're going to get there with that business and see success with it.
For sure. I've got a few quick questions to ask you. Hopefully, they're fun ones too. Would you be able to tell us about a hero in your journey? What did you learn from them? And what did you apply to your business or life in general from them?
Sure. I was thinking of a few that immediately came to mind. For me, it has to be Tim Ferriss, a very successful entrepreneur and author. I think mainly because he's been like a guardian looking over my entrepreneurial journey. The first ever podcast I listened to was Tim Ferriss back in 2014 when I started the business, when we got investment. And so suddenly it became like a real thing rather than a project, let's say. And just having that journey of being introduced to all these high-level investors and business people and philosophers that he interviewed was honestly the best education of beyond actually building the business, which is a real-life MBA. Having that in the background of really these sort of digital mentors was extremely powerful. And the other reason I say him is that as he has evolved from this like real high operator, fast business build, you know, was on the path to being one of the big names, Zuckerberg, right? Everyone knows who he is. And actually completely stepped back from that, probably, I don't know, maybe 5-6 years ago to go, actually what I want is freedom of time. I don't want stress. I don't want people to recognize me walking down the street. So he does audio, not video. Despite being one of the top podcasts. And yeah, realizing like all that stuff just not going to make him happy, having invested in Uber and Facebook and making that big public thing. And I think as he did that, followed his journey and done a similar thing of, God, rather than building this big startup, maybe I could actually just build a really nice small business for myself. So for me, it would have to be Tim Ferriss. I'd really recommend listening to his podcast.
Right. Yeah, I've listened to some of his ones before, and he's actually got some around podcasting that I listened to when I was launching this podcast.
Yeah. I mean, I've probably listened to 600 hours of him in the last 10 years. I mean, that much. Yeah,
I really love how, because of podcasts and blogs, we have access now to people we wouldn't normally have access to.
Yeah, and these are the mentors. You know, these, we talk about mentors and how they're really important. I've never had a physical mentor, and I had a couple, let's say, with my first business, but really the most effective ones have been podcasts, either the hosts or some guests that they have.
Yeah. So you've already just shared a podcast through the first question, but the second question was going to be, is there a podcast or book or blog that's helped you that you could recommend? Maybe we can eliminate Tim Ferriss's now. Maybe is there another one? Yeah.
I am trying to think through my mental library. I think one thing I've read, in fact, I'm still finishing a book called Positioning. It was written in the 80s, I think. Why do I think this is a good recommendation? Because we talk a lot about product and tech and development. If you cannot position a product, i.e. find a gap in a market effectively, you're screwed, right? The business is not going to work. So reading the book Positioning, it's actually really engaging, some really nice stories, is the foundation of a successful business, I think. So I would recommend reading that.
Great. And my final question, how do you set yourself up for success every day?
A great question. A habit. Pretty much the same routine. That's having had for the last 8 years, despite having dogs and a baby now and family and moving. Setting up since I start the night before, I'll be in bed like 8 o'clock. I'll read, maybe watch half an hour or something with my wife. Always read, usually fiction, for 30 to 60 minutes before going to sleep. I will sleep roughly 8 hours and try to wake up naturally, usually quite early. So by 6 a.m. and then 6 a.m. I'll get up, make a coffee, open my journal, do my journal, define one key thing to do today, plus maybe a short to-do list, and then just start with the day. But make that really solid routine every morning, do that 6 times a week, then the day is always going to be successful.
Fantastic. Great. Thank you so much for sharing that with us and sharing so much on this session today.
No, thanks for having me, Bhavisha. Nice to catch up as well.
Yeah, sure.